Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My name is Craig Wynn. I'm here with Kirk. We are going to be discussing the news and then discussing an open letter to Israel this evening. Mm-hmm. The news, of course, continues to be bleak. You have in the United States a race that actually means a lot to Israel, because the lone block to world domination over Israel continues to be the United States. That will not last very long. Should Kamala Harris be elected president, Israel's support will be non-existent. She was with her favorite people, Fakistinians, this past week. She told them specifically that she was open to discussing an arms embargo against Israel. Then when that ignited a firestorm of fury, she did what she does best, which is double talk. She lied and said that she never said that. And then the people she said it to said, oh, no, that's not correct. This is what specifically she told us. It is very much like her not doing her job and sitting in the seat behind Benjamin Netanyahu when he was invited to address both houses of Congress. The vice president is supposed to orchestrate to those kind of events. And she mm-hmm. decided that she would go to a sorority party instead, and then lied and said it had nothing to do with Netanyahu. I had a prior engagement. I do not like American politics. I have done everything I can to be critical of both parties. And normally I would say that the best approach is just to avoid them. But over these past 3 or 4 years, I have watched as the world has collectively gone for Israel's jugular. The world is largely run by progressives, and which is the new name for socialists. And they despise Israel. They have been conditioned to despise Israel for about 20 years now, and it is now hitting a feverish pitch. And the United States is really the last veto in the United Nations to a complete embargo against Israel, both weapons embargo against Israel, economic embargoes against Israel, for defending itself, mind you, just because the world is more anti-Semitic and more vicious and cruel today than it was in the approach previous world war, where 6 million Jews were annihilated. And again, the conditions are worse now than they were then. The last hope for at least forming a block against worldwide hate against Israel is the United States. And we have a race where one of the two candidates is decidedly in opposition to Israel. Now, she will say most anything that she thinks will help her be elected, but you can tell from her rhetoric and her prior positions that Cackles has does not mean it. And if she is elected president, Israel's days are numbered. So this is the one time where I would say that if you are so vehemently opposed to Donald Trump that you would support Cackles, then you are God's enemy, because you're supporting a person who will have tremendous influence and she will wield it against God's people. So while normally I would say don't be involved, and I'm not encouraging anyone to vote, I will not vote. You should not assign yourself to either political party. I'm here to tell you that if you are a liberal, a progressive, a socialist, and you are going to support Cackles because you despise Donald Trump, or because of any other reason you think that you need to control the Supreme Court so a woman has the right to an abortion, even if the child is in the third trimester, or that you think that wealth redistribution is the answer in a more compassionate approach, so be it. But understand that you're taking a position that is diametrically opposed to God's people, and you can't do that at this time and not elicit God's wrath. So my advice to progressives is to wake up from what is clearly a mind virus. Other items in the news before we go to our open letter in support of Israel. In the United Kingdom, which is becoming anti-Semite West, Ireland is already so far gone that they might as well change their flag to the fakest Indian flag. But the UK is close on their heels. Just in the first 6 months of this year, there were more anti-Semitic incidents than in all of last year. Anti-Semitism in the UK is up 100%. And what you can see in the UK is a very different standard for those who are calling for genocide against Jews and those who would support them. There are riots currently underway in the UK where the right is pushing back against the leftist immigration policy. It was incited by the murders of young children at a dance party. And the left says, you know, they are operating on misinformation and that the perpetrator was not an immigrant. Well, his parents were. He is clearly of African descent. I think it's Rwandan is where his parents come from. He also has autism, which the left doesn't want to talk about as a condition that we ought to be careful of. Trump's would-be assassin also was autistic. And so these are things we ought to understand, how an empathy disorder can be so destructive to our society. But anyway, the UK, it's a very serious problem. Elon Musk, less than a week ago, said that because of the unbridled immigration policy changing the culture of the UK and allowing people to promote genocide unchecked, and yet criminalizing those who speak out against them, he said this is going to lead to civil war. Now, I think he probably should have said it will lead to continual civil strife as opposed to civil war, but nonetheless, he said civil war. And of course, the leftists want to condemn Elon Musk as opposed to their own policies for causing this situation. I actually think that Elon Musk is the lone thread towards free left in terms of a bastion of free speech. If it were not for Elon Musk, we on this planet would lose the right of free speech. And while he will allow a lot of things on X that are repulsive, and he knows they're repulsive, he also recognized that if people aren't able to express themselves in an open forum, if everything that is said is fed through a thought police, then people are totally controlled and manipulated. And, you know, he had a, I believe it's a daughter who the left managed to convince that that she should be a he, and is turned against him and is a complete mess, as are most transgender people. And I think he is disgusted that his child was taken from him by progressives and abused, mutilated in this way. And so he's in a position where he can make a difference. And he is a man with integrity. And so he is one of the last bastions of free speech. He is doing a number of things, too, that out of his great wealth that could make a tremendous difference in the world. So I applaud what the man is doing. Also interesting, the second squad member, I think the squad is the most disgusting group of retrobates in politics worldwide. This one, Cori Bush, was also lost her primary. You know, they run in Democratic progressive communities where whoever wins the Democratic primary is guaranteed their seat. That's how Kamala Harris became a senator. So long as you do what the party wants you to do and you receive the nomination, you will win that seat. Well, there are times when the candidate, and the Cori Bush, is opposed, and she is the second squad member to be deposed. Of course, she lashed out at Israel and promised to burn their house down as a result. A lot of very disgusting people in the world. Mm. As we look at Israel, they are continuing to be threatened with annihilation by Iran. Israel has the UN condemning it for genocide when it has done nothing but respond to the attempted genocide of Muslims, and where even in Gaza, the civilian death count is less than half of 1% of that population, and where they are supervising the food distribution to them, that the antithesis of genocide, while those who are attacking them are perpetrating genocide and have against Jews for the last 1,400 years. But when Iran publicly declares from its highest ranking leaders that they intend to destroy Israel, nobody seems to care. Everyone around the world has lost their moral compass. It is a great travesty. So with Iran and Hezbollah claiming that they're going to punish Israel, a week and a half has gone by and nothing has happened. Now, we don't know what's going to occur. Well, we know exactly what's going to occur, and I'm going to share that with you here. We just don't, and I even know when it's going to occur. We don't know the kind of skirmishes that will arise between here and now and then. Mm-hmm. What is going to occur, and I think the order of events are that in May of 2026 is when I think that Israel will be forced to accept the two-state calamity, where a terror state of Islam will be carved out of the heart of Israel, and Israel will lose the ability to protect its borders and to diminish the amount of armaments flowing into a territory that severs it in half and does so where 70% of its population resides. while also giving up vast swaths of its homeland in the process, all to reward Islamic terrorists. It is a far more grievous political move than what Neville Chamberlain did on behalf of Adolf Hitler that led to the Second World War. I think it is likely that that's going to occur in May of 2026. And just as World War II commenced a year after Neville Chamberlain achieved peace in our time, the same thing is going to happen here within a year of the divestiture of the heartland of God's people. Islam is going to do the following. If you look at what happened on October 7th, which was the most vicious attack ever perpetrated by people pretending to be humans. The most vicious attack because those who perpetrated it were told to rape the victims, and not just rape them, but also mutilate them, and to have sex with those who they had mutilated and amputated limbs, even after they were dead, and then to desecrate their bodies, and to burn elderly and children alive, and to gloat over the process, and then to take people captive, even dead people captive, to the celebration of the community. It is the most horrendous event maybe ever perpetrated in human history in terms of the savagery of it and the very ghoulish nature of it. And that was perpetrated by about 2,500 to 3,000 Muslims. Would be unwise to say they were Hamas because Hamas actually represented the minority of them. It was just Muslims. Muslims being Muslims, not extremist Muslims, just regular Muslims. And they fired some 4,000 to 5,000bottle rockets. Now, okay, they were a little larger than bottle rockets, but they were exceedingly primitive devices. And there were 4,000 or 5,000 of those fired, while approximately 3,000 very lightly armed by militant standards, Mujahideen, mostly in pickup trucks and motorcycles, ransacked local communities within Israel. And the carnage was significant, with 1,200 Jews being killed and several hundred being hauled off as slaves, essentially, to be abused, to be raped, to be tortured in Gaza as trophies. And to hold the perpetrators accountable, Israel has lost hundreds of its servicemen and women and has squandered its credibility and reputation worldwide and has completely isolated itself, which is far worse than the 1,200 dead and 300 to 400 taken captive. And then you have about 40% of Israel protesting that the country must accept a deal with the terrorists, that they should not only negotiate with the terrorists, but accept their conditions, and no matter what they are, for the release of their captives. It is precisely what caused this attack on October 7th. And to do so again will make it certain that there will be another attack that will be far worse. If you try to save the lives of 100 people, and I don't think there's that many alive, I would think it's probably closer to 50. You try to save the lives of 50 people by rewarding the terrorists and releasing 500 terrorists from prison and giving the Islamic terrorists a respite from the ongoing attack to them. You open up their ability to rearm themselves by leaving the Philadelphian corridor between Gaza and Egypt, you will have signed your own death certificate. And yet 40% of Israelis are screaming, not at Hamas, but at their own government to capitulate, to the terrorists, as is the United States. And then you have an equal number of Israelis, the far right religious, that are just stunningly belligerent in their refusal to protect their own citizenry, even themselves, while they pretend that they are saving the country through prayer and Torah study. When they're not studying the Torah, they're studying the Talmud, and their prayers are revolting to God. There was a mini riot where they broke into a military base this past week, and he got to see them screaming and wallowing in the streets, and they're just reprehensible. I mean, the Haredim in their little black suits and their curlicues and black hats are just disgusting. They're vile. The worst of parasites. So Israel is a nation divided between progressives and right-wing wackos. And unfortunately, there aren't enough Israelis in the middle that seem to care enough to unite the country. So under this backdrop, let me tell you what's going to happen. Then I'm going to give some advice to Israel, and I'm going to tell you why I think I have earned the right to provide this advice.
Okay.
What is going to occur, and it's detailed in the prophets, is that within a year of narrowing Israel at the waist by sacrificing the homeland of God's people to reward Islamic terrorists and what's called the two-state solution, as championed by the United States. It's not championed by the Islamic world. They do not want a two-state solution. From the river to the sea means that they wish to annihilate Jews and completely destroy Israel. That will lead, as it did with Neville Chamberlain, by giving up the high ground of Czechoslovakia to World War III, which will begin with a thousandfold more aggressive version of what occurred on 10-7, 2023. You heard me, a thousandfold. For every rocket, there will be 1,000 rockets, missiles, drones, and artillery, as well as other mortars and anti-tank and anti-personnel weapons. 1,000-fold. The drones are already something that the Iron Dome does not handle well, and that nothing Israel has seems to be able to stop them well. It's not like a missile that is essentially ballistic, and once it's fired, the course is predetermined. Drones can move. They act unpredictably. And the Iron Dome is not set up to resolve them. Plus the fact these drones can be as inexpensive as a few hundred dollars into the several thousand dollars, and the interceptors are over $100,000 apiece. And those interceptors require negotiation with the United States that will soon be non-existent. Within 15 to 30 minutes of this next assault, one which will occur in 2027, Israel's largest cities will be afire. Many of them will be in ruins because there will be no way to stop 1,000-fold the aerial bombardment, particularly when the weapons will be vastly more powerful with larger warheads and also much better guidance. And this time, it won't be just the observation towers that are part of that fence that Israel was so convinced was going to protect them. This time, it'll be power grids. This time, it'll be water treatment facilities. This time, it will be their gas extraction facilities. This time, it will be airports. The weapons are far more precise, and they are far more powerful that will be brought against Israel, and they're far more numerous. And so Israel will essentially be taken back to the Stone Age. Now, that's actually the good part. Because the bad part of this scenario is that prophets like Yoel and, again, Yeshaya were very descriptive of what's going to occur, and they said that the type of assault will be far worse than anything humanity has ever witnessed before. So you're taking the most vicious attack ever perpetrated on human beings by monsters on October 7th of 2023 and multiplying it by 1,000 times. So under the cover of this massive aerial bombardment that brings Israel to its knees, there are going to be several hundred thousand monsters, Islamic jihadists, mujahideen, that are going to be entering Jewish homes and torturing children and raping both men and women, both alive and dead. And their numbers are going to be so significant. And they're going to attack the smaller communities while the larger cities are laid waste by the aerial bombardments, that there'll be nothing that Israel can do. Tanks aren't going to make any difference. Apache helicopters won't make any difference. F-35s will not make any difference. There literally is nothing that Israel will be able to do to prevent this or to resolve it. And so that is Israel's fate. And outside of Israel, it's going to be essentially impossible to be Jewish. And for those who think that their progressivism, where they speak out against Israel and deny Israel, will cause them to be endeared by the Muslims who want to annihilate Israel, understand that they view you as useless idiots. And when someone who has a collective IQ of about 60 thinks you're an idiot, perhaps you ought to look in the mirror and figure out what in the hell you're doing with your life. But that's the world we're looking at. Anti-Semitism is going to become egregious. We know what happens to Jews when they do not have a homeland. We witnessed that with the Holocaust, and the Israelite homeland is going to be ravaged by a flood of Muslims. And when Yeshaya says that they're going to flood into Israel in such numbers that there is no way to stop them, understand that the Muslim view of flood, just as they called the operation on October 7th of last year a flood, is not a vision of rising waters, but instead of rising blood. And that's what they envision for Israel. So what I'm going to do this evening, because while that is going to occur, you don't have to be victimized by it. While that is going to occur, the carnage can be limited. While that is going to occur, Jews living inside and outside of Israel can be protected. You can keep your family and your loved ones safe from this carnage that is going to occur. So I'm going to speak to Israel this evening and to Jews worldwide to share the things that must be done if you don't want to be caught up in this carnage, where 2 out of every 3 Jews over the next 9 years are going to die. And they're going to fare much better than the world at large, where a higher percentage of people are going to die.
Yeah.
And we have this from Yahweh's prophets. He has never been wrong on a prophecy, and he is never going to be wrong on a prophecy. And that's because he is not predicting the future. Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, exists outside of the limits and constraints of time, where for us, time is the fourth dimension, and we're stuck in the ordinary flow of it. Yahweh, as a spiritual energy-based being, is not. He's like a photon of light where all time exists simultaneously. And so he is able to witness our future in our past and report it to us, which is what he did through the prophets. So it's not that he is predicting the future, but he is reporting future history. He is telling us about the consequence of our collective choices and the hell that we have brought upon ourselves. So there are 20 points that I wish to make this evening. And I think I have earned the right to share them with Yisrael. I happen to be a goy, but I'm not an ordinary goy.
No.
I have not only invested the past 23 years of my life translating the Torah, prophets, and Psalms so that Yisrael might come to know Yahweh and return home to him to be reconciled to the relationship before it is too late, so that they might enjoy being part of the Shavuah and Teruah harvest, or at the very least be there when Yahweh returns with Dod on Yom Kippurim on October 2nd at sundown in 2033, year 6000 Yah. No one has ever done the things that I have done, which puts me in a very unique situation as it relates to this message I'm going to give to Israel. The first of those is that I have written the most comprehensive review of the Quran and Hadith, taking the chronological Hadith, particularly of Ishaq and Tabari, used them to reorder the Quran chronologically, translated the Quran, and then put it all into the context of Muhammad's life to expose how great a threat Islam is to God's people, to even express how rabbis made this possible by selling Talmud stories to Muhammad, making the Quran appear religious when it otherwise would not have seemed so. And to tell Jews that Muslims declared war on them 1,400 years ago. They began to perpetrate genocide against God's people 1,400 years ago, beginning with Muhammad, and that they need to know that is the case. And no one has written as boldly or as bluntly or as clearly, irrefutably about Islam as I have. The Goddamn Religion series, 5 volumes, each averaging over 800 pages, is absolute proof. In addition, I'm the only person who not only has done that, but has also written 4 volumes exposing and condemning Christianity. And the reason that this is important is not only has Christianity been the most diabolical menace to Jews these past 2,000 years, worse even than Islam. Yes. Without Christianity, there is no Holocaust. Without Christianity, there is no conspiracy theories blaming the Jews for everything, including killing the Christian God. But Christianity exists because the first rabbis failed. They failed God. They failed Jews. Because what actually occurred is that Dod David, who is the Messiah and Son of God, came to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. And yet, not only wasn't he recognized, he was denied by God's people, leaving a void that was filled by what I call replacement foolology, where the myth of Iesu Christu, Jesus Christ, was slathered upon the actual life and words and titles and accolades and achievements of Dod as the Messiah and Son of God, our Savior. And it was only possible because as obvious as God made it that he was going to do this through his son, the Jews denied it. And then making matters worse, they came up with a false Messiah of their own. So telling that story and trying to awaken God's people to the truth about the Messiah and Son of God, to their Savior, to the Passover Lamb, Dod, who is the returning king, I've written 4 volumes called Twistianity. No one has ever done that previously, in addition to having exposed and condemned Islam. But it doesn't stop there, because I have proven that the book that rabbis dearly love, Ezekiel, is Satan's playbook, and that the supposed God that is presented in it and the stories that he tells of 25 ways to kill Jews and to rape Jewish women and to circumvent Yahweh's instructions and to plaster over all Israel. Depicts Satan's autobiography. It's his playbook. And it explains much of the rabbinical mindset, which is so destructive. And so there are three volumes in a Babel series on top of the four volumes condemning Christianity and exposing it, and the five volumes called Goddamn Religion, exposing and condemning Islam. But there's more. Because within the Torah and prophets, there are hundreds and hundreds of references to what Yahweh has asked me to do for his people. There are more references to what I am doing on behalf of Yehudim and Yisrael than to maybe any other than God's word. Lastly, I would share that there's something else that I have done that, two things here that I should share that no one else has ever done. One is that the single most prevalent theme throughout the Torah and prophets is that God is disgusted by his people's propensity to be religious. And so when the religious say that they are Torah observant, they're lying. Because if they were Torah observant, they would know how disgusted God is with them for being religious. When we read the Torah and we see how many times Jews were disgusting. I mean, Abraham was a scallywag. He pimped out Sarah twice for financial gain. Jacob had all sorts of major issues in his life. His children went and sold a brother into slavery and were reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
There was never really a good time. Briefly under Dode, but Jews even turned on him. Look at your behavior during the Exodus. You didn't even get out of Dodge before you started blaming God and saying, I want to go back to being slaves. First thing you did when he made you safe on the other side of the Red Sea is build a idol
sculpture
to the Apis bull cult in Egypt. But it didn't stop there. Every time you turn around, Jews were bellyaching it. First time that God said, okay, I'm going to speak to the entire community of Israel. And what was Israel's response? Don't ever talk to us again. We never want to see you again. We never want to hear from you again. Then you've got the waters of Meribah, one of the most disgusting episodes ever between God and a community. Then you have when the so-called spies, but the one member of each tribe, went into the promised land and they came back as complete and utter ingrates and wussies. One episode after another, after another, after another, to the point where it's amazing that God even led his people into the promised land after all of this. It's just a disaster, what Jews have been. And then you read through the prophets and a book like Yeshayah. You've got the great Isaiah scroll. You put it up in this shrine. And what it says is the first 10 chapters, I'm disgusted at my people's propensity to be religious. You look at the book of Hosea, I'm divorcing my people because they're religious. No matter where you turn, that's the story. So after all of this time, after 3,500 years of being religious and being disgusting to God, don't you think maybe it's time to change? Do you want to continue to spit in God's face, to irritate him, to continue to be religious? You won't even say his name and think that he's going to somehow do something favorable for you as the world comes down against you? Or maybe finally you'll do the right thing, come to appreciate his name, say his name, understand the conditions and benefits of the covenant, understand the purpose of the invitations to meet, understand the role both Moshe and Dode play in our lives. The other thing that I have done that no one else has done is I've explained the five conditions and five benefits of the covenant. I've explained each of the seven Moed Mikre, when they were or will be fulfilled, by whom and why, and what they represent, and how they make the benefits of the covenant possible. No one else has ever done that before.
Never.
Nor has anybody in the past 2,500 years explained how to pronounce Yahweh's name and explained to God's people why it's important. So I think I've earned the right to share some insights with God's people as to what they need to do if they're going to survive this next 9.5 years. And so that you're not misguided, the Rambam's calendar is for shit. He came up with this scheme of the moon and 19 scheme that both are derived from Islam, because he was vizier in the Islamic world, and disregarded the Torah in terms of its timeline and got everything wrong. We are now just 9 years from year 6,000 Yah, when Yahweh and Dode are going to return. It is 5,991 Yah. And so you only have 9 years left if you're among the fortunate who are going to be the remnant of Yisrael. All right. So I've got 20 points. We're going to see if we can get through these this evening. This is Israel's to-do list. If you want to be among those who survive the next 10 years, you need to acknowledge Yahweh and return to him. There is no other viable option, no other hope. Israeli politicians, rabbis, and military have all failed. It is the first time that both the left and the right have completely failed Israel politically. It is a demonstrable fact that the rabbis are now a parasite and that they have failed Israel miserably. And for the first time, the IDF has failed. Now, I think there's wonderful young men and women who are devoted to the service of their country that serve in the IDF, and many have fallen, giving their last ounce of effort, protect Israel. But the leadership is God-awful. And if Israel does not replace the leadership of the IDF, there's really no hope. They are prepared for a war that will never be fought, and they are ill-prepared for the one that is coming, just as they were ill-prepared for the one that has just occurred. So every aspect of Israeli society has failed them. Jews have become their own worst enemy, and they have been for the last 3,500 years. What I'm telling you is that for the last 3,500 years, Jews have done the same thing with the same result. So unless you want to play insane, it's time, way past time, to change. Ignoring Yahweh. Recognize his name. Throw away the Talmud. Study what the Torah has to say. Come to understand the covenant and how it is the only means to form a relationship with Yahweh. And it has five conditions. One of them is a prerequisite, which is that you disassociate yourself from the babble of religion and politics from your country, such that you come to trust and rely on Yahweh and walk to him to allow him to perfect you, as opposed to relying on your culture or your political identity or your religious community. It is well past time to stop being unappealing and obnoxious to God. Every soul, both Yehudim and Goyim, lives or dies based upon this proposition. So the thing that I would most encourage, and nothing will help you unless you deal with this first point. You come to embrace Yahweh. Stop being religious. Stop being political. Start reading what God said to us in the Torah and prophets. And if that's difficult for you, read Yada Yahweh. 35 books on the shelf. They're all free. Come to read what God had to say to you. I'll begin with an introduction to God. Yes, I've heard that people go to the Yada Yah site, yadayah.com. Y-A-D-A means to know, to acknowledge, to understand, to appreciate. And Yah is short for Yahweh, God's name, to know Yahweh. Go to Yada Yah or yadayah.com. You'll see 35 books on the shelf. And say, oh, my God, where do I start? It's just overwhelming. Well, good.
Start there. Well, good
That's
one.
The way it's supposed to be. God is not looking for somebody that wants to cheat their way into heaven. If all you had to do was make a confession of faith, then heaven would be no different than the hell we are experiencing on earth. God is only interested in those who are interested and enough in him that they're willing to devote the time to get to know him as he revealed himself and are willing to accept conditions of the covenant and who are willing to attend his invitations to meet as they were fulfilled by his son. So that is where we are. That is what needs to be done. And if you do those things, then what you're going to find is Yahweh embracing and protecting you, and you will also find opportunities to work with him to awaken your brethren. So that's the first thing. That doesn't happen, nothing happens. Point two, recognize that Islam is the enemy. Hamas, Hezbollah, the Islamic State, Islamic Jihad, the Houthis, Iran, Turkey, Qatar, Jordan, Egypt, and Syria are symptoms of a collective and relentless foe. And if you say, oh, we can't declare war against 2 billion people, well, I've got news for you. Muslims declared war on Jews 1,400 years ago. The declaration of war against all mankind, beginning with Jews. Muhammad and the first Muslims attempted to perpetrate genocide. They wiped out every Jew in Arabia. And you look what happened in Islamic countries since 1948. 99% of the Jewish population has either been exiled or eliminated. Muslims want to annihilate Jews. You can't change that. You can't make that better. You ignore it at your peril. But to pretend as Netanyahu and all of your political and media leaders are saying that Hamas is the enemy and Hezbollah is bad, bad, and God, we just hate those Houthis. Iran is the nexus of evil. BS. Yeah, they're all bad. But what do they have in common? What is the common denominator between Hezbollah, the Islamic State, Islamic Jihad, Hamas?
Islam. Always Islam.
The Houthis, Iran, Turkey, Qatar, Jordan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. What is the common denominator?
Yeah.
Are you stupid?
Always.
It's Islam. You know, the average IQ of a Jew is 15 points above the rest of the world, and you can't figure this out? You're afraid to say it? As a matter of fact, if you say it in Israel, it's a crime. They'd throw your criminal ass in jail.
Isn't that amazing?
Amazing. Unbelievably stupid. How the brightest people in the world could be so stupid. It is, it's astonishing. Nonetheless, you have no chance to survive the onslaught of Islam and the flood of blood that is coming within 3 years. If you do not understand that your enemy is Islam. I rewrote, took 9 months of my life after spending 5 years of my life writing Prophet of Doom and doing 5,000 radio programs to promote it and receiving up to 10,000 death threats.
Yeah.
I spent 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. Rewriting Prophet of Doom is goddamn religion as a gift to Israel. You're without excuse. Everything you need to know about Islam to protect yourself from it is in those books, and it is absolutely irrefutable. Those books are entirely based on the five oldest and most credible Islamic sources. There is no way to refute anything in it without completely refuting the religion of Islam. Every good Muslim is a terrorist. That's just a fact. That is what Allah says. Allah makes it unbelievably clear that if you are pretending to be a Muslim and are peaceful, that you are a hypocrite, that you are no longer a Muslim, and that he wants good Muslims to kill you so that he can torture you forever in hell. So if you know somebody who claims to be a Muslim who also claims to be peaceful, they're a hypocrite. They are the hypocrites that comprise the grass that the snake that is Allah hides. So your enemy is Islam. And this religion is a death cult. And the greatest prize is in killing Jews. Muhammad even said, kill every Jew. Denying that does you no good. The progressives who would like to coddle Muslims, who want to parade around with Muslims, who encourage Muslims to pronounce genocide on Jews for having done so. Unbelievably stupid. Number three.
Mm-hmm.
Israel, to survive, must boldly state that there is no such thing as a Palestinian nor place called Palestine. You must oppose an Islamic state carved out of the Jewish homeland to survive as a people. If you do not, then we will find out if Kamala Harris or some other individual gets to be the next Neville Chamberlain, will sacrifice Israel to the terrorists, just like Neville Chamberlain sacrificed the high ground of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler and caused world war. The last time 6 million Jews died. This time, it will be twice that number.
Yeah.
Two out of every three Jews will die. And what happens when there is an Islamic terrorist state carved out of the heart of the Jewish homeland is that in the narrowest part of Israel, where 70% of the people live, the country will be condensed to about 5 miles wide. And on both sides, there'll be a flood of weapons as they position themselves to conduct a vastly more egregious, a thousandfold increase on what happened on October 7th. They will not just come through Gaza, but they will come through Egypt, and through Saudi Arabia, and through Syria, and through Jordan, and through Lebanon, and from Turkey by way of the sea, and through from Iraq and Iran, through Syria, into Israel. This is what's going to happen, and there'll be no way to stop it. Catalyst will be the same as it was for the last world war. And all of this is occurring because Israel did not have the courage or boldness or intellect to say what needed to be said. That when the notion of Palestine began to emerge in the 1950s and 1960s, when prior to that time, Gaza was part of Egypt and the West Bank was part of Jordan, and there was no such thing as a Palestine or Palestinian. Back at that time, the only reference to such a word was because Hadrian was maniacal, and he lured Jews back into Israel, played them for fools, and then brought his legions upon them to annihilate them. And once he had annihilated all rebellion, he renamed Judea, the province of Judea, Philistia. And because the Roman Catholic churches had such influence in Europe, and since liberal professor types love Latin names, they have retained this false moniker. It was based, of course, on the Philistines of old. But if you're going to base a name on the Philistines of old, you have to recognize that the only reference to them is through Yahweh and his prophets.
Yeah, which is
if what Yahweh says about them is true, they're invading terrorists from Crete. Reprehensible people. If what Yahweh says about them is not true, then they never existed. Nothing else is known of them. And as it would turn out, Dode, after the Philistines badgered Israel, stealing even the Ark of the Covenant, killing the prior king, Dode brought them into submission. And after he did so, they were essentially annihilated by the Assyrians, then again by the Babylonians, then again by Alexander and the Greeks, such that by the time that Alexander mopped up the last of them, there was nothing left. There hasn't been a Philistine or anybody by that ethnicity for 2,300 years. And normally, people are hauled off into slavery, which is why there's a remnant of Jews. After Hadrian mopped up and crucified and killed many, many Jews in Judea, he hauled the rest off into the diaspora, into slavery. But that's because Jews were civilized. The Philistines were never civilized. And so there was no financial benefit in enslaving them. So they were annihilated. That's the simple truth. There has not been a Philistine for 2,300 years, and to parade under that moniker is to be an idiot. To accept people by that name is to be played a fool. If Israel is going to survive, you must make it illegal to use the term Palestinian. And anyone that uses an Israel should be arrested. It should never be used in the media, never be used by any politician, never be spoken, period. There is no such thing as a place, never has been a Palestine, nor has there ever been a Palestinian people. These people are not related by ethnicity. They're only related by Islam. They're Muslims, full stop. Also, their intent is not to live with you. Their intent is to annihilate you. Number four, accept the fact that there never has been and never will be any way to reform Islam or the Palestinian Authority. Admit that Muslims are bred and then conditioned to be terrorists. No one is innocent. No one is a civilian in their war to exterminate Jews. Women are bomb manufacturers.
That's true.
The simple truth. Yeah. You know, I was asked by my wife this week. She said, so, you know, we've lived here in this community. It's an African-American community. It's a tough community to live in because the murder rate's higher than any place else in the world. And the work ethic is horrible. And the local community would rather fight one another than they would exchange words.
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife said, so if at infancy, if we were to remove a child from that community and raise them in a wholesome, nurturing way, would we be able to eliminate the culture or have they, through generations of being vicious to one another, abusive, you know, the mothers were beaten by their husbands. So they don't typically have husbands, but by their baby daddies and by their mothers, and they beat their children. And it's very, very pervasive. And so this culture is violent and it's murderous and it has a lousy work ethic and it will steal, they steal one another blind. Could you raise a child to be a good human being in a different culture? The same thing is true if you took a Muslim baby, where when they're born, they have a sword put next to them, and they are set off to the side and dedicated to kill Jews and to Allah. You see them as indoctrinated terrorists threatening to kill Jews at very early age, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. Now, they have been bred for this.
Yes.
Now, let me give you an example. People are not, people are animals. And so I'm going to use dogs as an example. I love dogs. But dogs are bred for characteristics. I have a Labrador. That's my sixth Labrador. Every one of my Labradors has had the same disposition. They're bred for this disposition. So Labradors that don't have this disposition don't breed. They only breed Labradors with this disposition. The disposition is to be loving family and companion dogs. That is what they do. It's bred into them. So after 1,400 years of any peaceful Muslim being hunted and killed by their parents on Allah's orders, and only the most vicious of Muslims breeding, what do you think they bred after 1,400 years?
The same type.
Yes. Now that might sound horrendous, but it is what we witness. There is no chance that a child born to Muslim parents is going to turn out to be a decent person. It just doesn't happen. Look what happens when they're given power in the United States. Look at the squad. Stupidity and the arrogance and the viciousness of them. Look what happened in Israel on October 7th. Look what happens worldwide when Muslims are chanting genocide to Jews. It is what has been done to them. The only thing that can be done is to quarantine them. I don't wish to kill them. I think that bullets and bombs are counterproductive when you're dealing with a religion. Quarantine. Mm-hmm. Stop funding it. Stop enriching it. Stop coddling it. Just quarantine it as you would any infectious disease. If you're not willing to do that and accept the fact that you've been trying to reform the Palestinian Authority since the Oslo Accords, and what has it gotten you? And why do you think now that you're going to prevail? You know why no one wants to volunteer to oversee Gaza after this war? Is because the Gazians are the worst of Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
They know that it's impossible.
I don't know.
The worst enemy of the Gazians are not the Jews. It's the organizations like Hamas and Islamic Jihad.
Mm-hmm.
And they crucify their own. So there is no reforming Islam. There's no reforming the Palestinian Authority. There is no changing the textbook so that Jewish children at 3 and 4 years old are not taught to hate and to kill Jews. It's not going to happen. And to pretend otherwise is to become their victim. Number 5. Jews need to understand the scar that is the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque. They need to understand how those buildings came into being. They need to speak openly about their inappropriate nature. And they need to weaponize them. What I said on October 8th, now almost 10 months ago, was that those two buildings ought to have been used to return the hostages. Where if I were Netanyahu, I would say, you have 24 hours to return every hostage, or I will raise the Dome of the Rock. And if you don't, in 24 hours, do that, I will raise Al-Aqsa Mosque. Flatten them. And you'd say, oh, then you'd have all of Islam against you. They're already against you.
Yeah, but
you've stopped the rallying cry. And while you're doing it, explain the truth about them. They are nothing but an embarrassment to Islam, but people are just so ignorant and so lazy, they don't bother to read. You know, the story of Al-Aqsa is reprehensible. Muhammad engaged in what's called the never-ending argument. People who knew him best despised him. They knew that he was a demon-possessed, covetous charlatan, a complete fraud. And they told him so. And that's the most prevalent story throughout the Quran. And so Muhammad, being thin-skinned, told those who he could not best in debate that he was going to slaughter them. And so his kin, the Quraysh, it was in Petra, not Mecca, decided they would appease him. Oh, they decided, we're going to play the Jewish card here. We're going to appease him. We're going to see if we can modify him. And so they came up with what's called the idolatrous indulgence. They offered Muhammad sex, power, and money if he would accept their gods. So he could be king for a day, have the prettiest women in town, and they give him boatloads of money if he would just stop being a menace and stop threatening to kill them. Muhammad accepted the deal. But then his father-in-law, who had supplied him with his six-year-old sex toy, said, wait a minute. You promised me a monotheistic religion, and now you've got three goddesses that are joining our monotheistic god, which they couldn't at that point come up with a name. It was Ar-Rahman, and then it was the Lord, and then became Allaha, Allahu, or Allahe. Yeah, they really didn't know what his name was supposed to be. But then they added Alat, Manat, and Al-Uzza. It was a pagan potpourri for a monotheistic religion. And so Muhammad said, my bad, but understand that all of Allah's messengers speak for Satan. So his excuse in adding three more gods to Islam is that Satan inspired me to say it.
Yeah, that was
because
clever.
He inspires all of Allah's messengers. Well, that took his fledgling cast of characters from about 20 after 10 years of preaching down to about 4. And so Muhammad needed an escape plan, a plan B. And so this Petra and Kaaba thing wasn't working out for him. So one night he's in bed with his 6-year-old girl toy, and he imagines that he was approached by a flying donk mule, an al-barak, an ass with wings, and that he boarded Air Ass and flew due north to Jerusalem, where he debarked from Air Ass and met with all the bigwigs of Judaism. He met with Adam, he met with Noah, he met with Moses, he met with Joseph, he met with Aaron, he met with David, he met with Solomon, he met with them all. He even met with the mythical character that they call Esau for Jesus, who never even existed. He met with all of them. And he was such a big shot, Muhammad was, that he led them in the Islamic prostration prayer. He was their imam. Of course, the temple that he said he met them in had been destroyed 600 years before his little visit. Then, jumping from the Temple Mount, while mooning God with all of the, goes through Islamic hell on his way to meet with Allah. And thereafter, making a fool of himself and coveting his his adopted son's wife, which would be incest because he did steal her from him. He found that hell was filled with women who were hung by their breasts through with meat hooks because they didn't fully appreciate the men in their lives, like Muhammad. And then he makes his way through the seven heavens, finally gets up to Allah after going through Islamic hell. And Allah says, what I want is to be mooned 50 times a day. No insights, no discussion. Just moon me 50 times a day. Mose sends him back and said, hey, man, you know, I tried that with the Jews, this 50 prostration prayers, mooning God 50 times a day. It was too rough on them. You need to go back and negotiate a decrease. And he does that three or four times. And the only discussion is how many times Allah wants to be mooned a day. Comes back, wakes up the next morning. Aisha, his six-year-old wife, tells the 70-year-old, don't go off and tell anybody that. You're already in the doghouse. No one believes you. You'll make a complete fool of yourself. And he says, oh, I'm going to go tell them exactly what I want to tell them. That's the story of Alaska. So if you think that that's credible for Islam, have at it. Well, they left him out of town. He fell, according to the Hadith, to four followers after almost 12 years of presenting Islam. And the first meeting he has out of town is called the Pledge of Aqaba. The Pledge of Aqaba is to wage war against all mankind. It's the first year of the Islamic era. It's when Islam begins, based upon the Pledge of Aqaba, which was a pledge, an oath, for Muslims to wage war against all mankind. From that point, they went to the most populous city in Arabia, a city that was three-quarters Jewish, called Yathrib, and systematically perpetrated genocide against the Jews. Some 30,000 Jews lived there, raped the women, enslaved the children, murdered the men. And those that escaped went to Kabar. He went and did the same thing in Kabar. This is the story of how those scars came to be on the Temple Mount, the mount that Daud purchased, that he assembled all of the wherewithal to build the covenant home that Solomon built, that the original Sermon on the Mount took place, all scarred by a monument to Satan. You would do the world a great service to destroy it.
Yes, sir.
Use it to weaponize it. What I would say now, because you were too late to use it to get your hostages returned, I would now say the next major assault that is launched against Israel, we will destroy Alaska Mosque and the next one after that, the Dome of the Rock. So if you think that you're going to perpetrate genocide against Jews, understand that will be our response. We will destroy the Dome of the Rock and Alaska Mosque. So if you attack us, understand that will be the consequence. Number six. I said, by the way, every one of these on the morning of October 8th in a very long letter that I wrote to Israel. It's available on the website. It's available in the first volume of Goddamn Religion. And it's available also as a audio archive. Number six is the same. Israel must graphically and humanely reveal the carnage that occurred not only on October 7th, but before the nation was formed, reformed in 1948, what the Muslims did to Jews prior to the nation being established, and what Muslims have inflicted on Jews since that time. Israel is losing the public perception war. And the only way to turn that around is for Israel to act aggressively, and it needs to act graphically. The images of what occurred, for example, on October 7th are so inhuman, so savage, they need to be shown. And you'd say that's not the way Jews work. You know, we may their memory be a blessing. We don't want the last memory of a loved one to be mutilated and raped and desecrated by Muslims and to be kicked in the streets of Gaza as a trophy. Well, then their lives were sacrificed for nothing. If you want to make their lives meaningful, if you want their loss to save thousands and millions, then you need to show their whole life story. All of the wonderful pictures and images that you have of them prior to this assault, what happened to them during this assault. Graphically show the charred and mutilated bodies and precisely what occurred. Tell the story so that the progressives that are marching in support of Islam against Jews know what they're supporting. Hold them accountable. Make it more difficult for the world to speak against you. I know it is painful, but there are things that are far more painful. And that is being humiliated after having been humiliated. Number 7, Israel must stop negotiating with Muslims. Stop pretending that you want normalization with Saudi Arabia. It isn't worth crap. They hate you. They will destroy you. In Islam, negotiations have no binding, no meaning whatsoever to the Muslims. It's the whole story of Hudaybiyah. If you don't know the story of Hudaybiyah, then shame on you. But the fact is that at Hudaybiyah, Muhammad realized that he had come down with his jihadists in too few a numbers and too lightly armed to be certain that he could wipe his own family, his extended family members and kin out. And so he got cold feet and he negotiated a surrender where he promised that he would not attack his own family for 10 years. He wouldn't terrorize them anymore. He wouldn't rape the women, wouldn't kidnap them. He wouldn't do the things that Muslims did on October 7th for 10 years. And it was all because he had consistently lost the never-ending argument, and he knew that his hold on these neophyte Muslims was so tenuous that exposed to Muhammad's kin, those who knew him best, he would be bested and lose them. So he said, I am not Allah's messenger. He denied Allah even existed and made promises that he would renege on the following year. On the way out of Dodge, the Muslims attacked Kabar, torturing and murdering and enslaving and raping every Jew within that following, that farming community. Stop negotiating with Muslims. No more surrenders like of abandoning Gaza. No Oslo Accords and abandoning the West Bank. Stop doing it. Stop negotiating for a normalization agreement with Saudi Arabia. It will cost you your life, and you will gain nothing in the process. And to negotiate with those who abducted your own citizens because they wanted to have you release convicted terrorists, grossly immoral. Number 8, Israel must remain in control of the Gazan-Egyptian border. And they must gain control of the borders between Syria, Jordan, and where the Palestinian Authority currently fans the flames of Islamic terrorism. If Israel does not stop the flow of weapons, then they are assured to have a vastly worse version of 10/7 occur. Egypt, no matter their lip service, aided and abetted the arming of Gaza. And There are tunnels large enough to drive commercial vehicles through. Israel did nothing to stop them. Israel does have a large border, but the border is only to keep the Gazans caged in because they don't want them in their country. Nobody wants them. Israel made a tragic mistake by returning the Sinai to Egypt after the Six Days War. And that is the logical place to push these Muslims and then let the world throw money at them so that they can have all manner of support systems and then see what happens when they're on their own, but keep them quarantined. But in the meantime, Israel can never relinquish control of the Philadelphian corridor or their every Jew that has died since this war began will have died for nothing. Number 10, Israel needs to replace the leadership of the Mossad, the Shin Bet, and the IDF. Netanyahu this past week attacked the head of the Mossad and Shin Bet and said, you guys are really lousy negotiators. And it's true. They shouldn't be negotiating with Hamas in the first place, but if you're going to do it, don't be wimps. If you're going to be part of the IDF, accept responsibility. The IDF's response on October 7th was abysmal, totally and completely inexcusable. IDF intelligence was wrong. IDF responses were wrong. And the IDF has prosecuted the war in Gaza in a way that has no chance of prevailing. They're just flat out wrong. You need to replace all of them. Israel needs to have a constitution. I'd recommend the Torah, but I don't know if enough Jews understand it for that to prevail. Mm-hmm. They must constrain their high court because their high court right now has more power than any elected official. They must move away from parliamentary coalitions because they are the government of bribery. And they need to separate religion from politics. All of those things must be done to keep Israel intact. Number 11, Israel must revamp the IDF for 10-7 times 1,000 because that is the nation's fate and vulnerability. The nation thinks that because they have a large supply of tanks that they can prevail. But a tank is a rolling coffin. If you're fighting an enemy more sophisticated than the Gazians, tanks have no value anymore. They think they can prevail because they have so many attack helicopters, but they couldn't even use them to protect Israelis on 10-7. They had 10 hours to get them engaged in the battle and couldn't do so. We have learned that, for the most part, Israel's fleet of fighters is essentially useless, particularly for this kind of battle. And so Israel needs to revamp the IDF for what occurred on 10-7 times 1,000 in terms of the kind of aerial assault and jihadist assault. Now, since there is no way for the Iron Dome or Sling or any other device that Israel has of effectively shielding the kind of attack of several hundred thousand aerial devices coming at them over the course of 24 and 48 hours, possible. Israel has only one chance as it relates to particularly the stash at Hezbollah and particularly the stash in Iran. And that's a preemptive strike.
Mm-hmm.
So you either take them out or they will take you out. And as I said the other day, you know, when I said that Hezbollah is actually capable of taking because they have Iranian weapons, and they are now aided and abetted by Russia because of the United States' stupidity as it relates to the proxy war in Russia. That because of that, Hezbollah and Iran and the axis of evil can render Israel back to the Stone Age. That is just a fact. Now, can Israel also do the same to them? Yes. But mutually assured destruction does not work with insane religious zealots who are looking for that kind of martyrdom. So it's not going to work just because you can do it to them. You know, Netanyahu was speaking at one of your nuclear sites and suddenly telling Iran, you know, you don't want to attack us because we got nuclear bombs. What do they care? They want to die as martyrs. So it's not a defense. Israel number 12 must lead a preemptive strike against Iranian weapons in Lebanon and nukes in Iran, or be ravaged by them. The Iron Dome has no chance of prevailing. And the reality here is they've given a lot of lip service. We'll never allow Iran to have a bomb. Well, you want to know why Iran had that feeble attack a few months ago and why the Iranian attack is being delayed now and they're kind of deciding what they're going to do? Because they have no intent on squandering their arsenal in a revenge attack. They're saving their arsenal such that they can shoot 300, 400, 500,000 missiles and drones and rockets and artillery pieces and anti-personnel bombs and munitions at Israel all at once.
My gosh.
That's what they're waiting for. Because when they do that all at once and then release, well, you look at just the Iranians. The Iranians have a regular military of more than 1,000 times the number of jihadists that came in from Gaza.
Yeah.
That's just from Iran. And then you look at the numbers of hundreds of thousands from Hezbollah, and then Syria, Jordan, and Egypt, and on it goes, Turkey.
Yes.
You know, so you're either going to take them out or you're going to be ravaged by them. It's your choice. I understand the world would react, but that's just the way it is. So make your call one way or another. You can wait to be attacked and only lash back as after the fact, or you can take them out now. But if you don't do that with Iran's nuclear program, they will have a bomb. And that is one of the things that Iran has been reluctant to attack Israel aggressively until their nuclear program is finished, where they think they are now impervious. Number 13, Israel must become more adept at refuting progressives while discrediting Islamic protesters. As it sits today, while Muslims are more savage and more physically lethal to Jews, the cover that is provided for them in international organizations such as the United Nations within the U.S. Congress at the heads of states throughout Europe, particularly now in Ireland and the U.K., the support for them is from progressives. And this has been growing for a long time, and it's what made these riots against Israel, calling for Israel to be exterminated, occurred because colleges are run by progressives.
Yes,
newspapers, for the most part, are run by progressives. The New York Times, the Washington Post are examples of that. And so with the media dominated by progressives, colleges indoctrinating a generation of progressives such that most young Europeans and Americans are progressives, they're almost uniformly anti-Israel. They are almost uniformly incapable of thinking. Progressivism has become a religious experience. It defines yes. people's lives. It is a brain virus that precludes the ability to think. Evidence and reason no longer matter as if they were religious. And they take positions that are anti-Israel, which is why we, as part of the covenant family, and why we, working with Yahweh on behalf of his people, care about them. The right-wing wackos and the conspiratorialists that blame Jews for all manner of things and were exceedingly anti-Semitic. And while they still exist and they're still repulsive, and I would go out of my way to condemn them, particularly in their conspiracies and their turning to violence as a first resort, they have 1% of the influence the progressives have. And so it's because of this issue and the fact that there is an enormous progressive culture within Israel and that these are the shrill voices that are screaming against their government and screaming to do a deal with Islamic terrorists that essentially seals Israel's fate. The nation is destroyed. These are the same people that want to reward the Islamic terrorists with a state of their own. Progressives have become exceedingly dangerous in this world. If we have time and maybe in another program, I'm going to talk about politics because Yahweh is exceedingly anti-political.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems we have is that the world is seen and is cast by politicians as left and right. Israel in particular, the whole discussion is left, the progressives and right, and both conservatives and the religious. But it's not a line. It's a circle. And the difference between a fascist and a socialist, and a socialist is the old term for progressive, the difference between the two is nil. They both believe that maximum amount of government authority, nationalizing most all major industries while still having some private business and some private land ownership. And so the difference between a fascist government and a socialist government is essentially nil. Both Adolf Hitler and Mussolini were both socialists for a decade before mm-hmm. they decided to use the term fascist. And now when you say that, to say, oh, but, you know, they attacked this communist, so they couldn't be socialists because they were attacking the communists. But they attacked the bastion of free enterprise, too. They attacked everybody. That's what happens with these kind of despots, is they rise to power on a particular theme, and then their only theme becomes themselves. And so everybody becomes their enemy. But we'll have to do a program on the circle. And what I want to lead you with now is that it's a question of more is less or less is more. The socialist progressive wants more government, which means less economic prosperity, less freedom of choice, of speech, of movement, and less of everything. You have less control over your lives and less economic prosperity, less intellectual stimulation, less invention, less enterprise with That's progressives. Nice. So yeah. More government equals less, even less in terms of values and judgment and reasoning and thinking. On the other side, what you have is less government. Yahweh's view is less government is better government. No government would be the best government. Yahweh has a very clear way of managing affairs through his Torah, and we'll do a program on it. I've spoken of it in the past. But what less government influence in people's lives gives is more freedom, vastly more economic prosperity. The ability for a community to grow and to prosper, to have less control and influence over their lives. So yeah. Less is more, and more is less. And the history of man has proved this over and over and over again. So I'd just like you to think about the fact that it is a circle where more equals less and less equals more.
Everything about Yahweh is free will.
Free will. Yes. So, and free will and free enterprise go hand in hand. Now, Yahweh has a marvelous way of dealing with this, which is that we are not more than equal. I mean, that is just a myth. You know, I look at the people around me, and I recognize that even now in my 60s, my mental processor functions vastly more effectively than theirs does. I'm not equal to others in terms of my dedication, my drive, my passion, intellect, ability to write, to convey thoughts, to make connections with things and understand. We're just not equal. You know, Elon Musk is not at the same level of Yasser Arafat. Because people are not equal and some people outperform others, what Yahweh realizes that it's okay for a father to reward their sons and daughters, you know, to work not only for themselves and their prosperity, but for their children's prosperity. He does that. But yeah. You can't create ongoing dynasties like this so that the following generation just doesn't work. So what Yahweh said, okay, generation being between 20 and 25 years, every 50 years, we're going to do a complete reset. All slaves are free. All debts are forgiven, and the land is returned. And so you start afresh every 50 years. And so it was a way to give everybody an equal opportunity again, recognizing that some people are going to prosper and they're going to outwork and outsmart others. And then in 50 years, you'll make the adjustment that those who work the hardest and the brightest and are the best at what they do, the most inventive, are going to create a much better environment for themselves and for their family. And then when it's every 50 years, you do a reset. That's Yahweh's view of things. He also doesn't want people given money. He wants poor people to be taken care of in the sense of if you are hungry, the corner of every field is there for you to harvest. If you are cold, there is wool provided for you to make clothing. There's wood for you to make housing. You're not given a house. You're given the materials to make your house. You're not given clothing. You're given the materials to make your clothing. You're not given food. You're given access to harvest it so that you can cook it for yourselves. And you're never given money. This does not destroy character, and it doesn't create animosity within a culture. Number 14, Israel must prepare to go it alone. Abandoned by the U.S. and sanctioned by the U.N., it must be independent economically and militarily. That's tough in today's world. But it's just the reality of where Israel is at this point. Israel has very few friends, and her friends are becoming fewer and fewer, and there will be more and more economic and military sanctions put on Israel, and Muslims surrounding Israel will become ever more belligerent. And so the only way to protect Israel, and without Israel, by the way, you know, for American Jews in particular, the last time that the world was this anti-Semitic and there was no safe homeland for Jews to go, 6 million of you were killed. So you need to understand the importance of having a viable Israel. But Israel needs to be prepared to go it alone. Number 15, Israel needs to realize that the Haredim are lying when they claim that they are studying the Torah and providing a service to God. They are religious parasites. They are destroying the nation from within. Listen, I do not care that people want to be ultra-religious. You can do whatever you want. You want to wear your own funeral clothes, so be it. I don't like the fact that you are precluding young people from having access to the internet. I don't like it that you're indoctrinating them. I don't like it that you treat women as if they have no rights. I think all of those things are terrible. But in a religious community, people choose to be religious. So long as they can choose not to be religious, I don't have any problem with you squandering your life. But when you demand that the country pay for you to be a parasite, that's not good. No. When you won't defend the country that you live in, and, you know, I'm opposed to militaries with one exception, and that's Israel, because Israel is surrounded 100-to-1 by those who would wipe her out, would perpetrate genocide. So if you're going to be a Jew, you have to defend the nation. And in the case of Israel, the Haredim essentially don't fight. They don't work either. Now, that's not a blanket statement, but it is a generality that applies. And so the other thing that Israel needs to understand is that the customs that have been perpetrated by the religious on Islam are wrong. There are no high holy days. There is no Rosh Hashanah. There is no Purim with God. God speaks of Chag Matzah, where Passover is just the one and the first day of the 7-day celebration of Matzah, and yet the Jews rabbis make pasta a 7-day celebration where matzah is only an ingredient, and they have no idea what happened on matzah and why it is important and why it is actually vastly more important than Passover. They have no idea who fulfilled Passover. They have no idea when Yah was going to return. They have no idea what the next two harvests are. Everything that religious Jews are saying is the absolute opposite of who God is and what he's offering and what he's expecting in return. And in this regard, you cannot be Torah observant and be religious. It's impossible. If you read the Torah, you will realize just how disgusted God is at his people's propensity to be religious. It is deadly to Jews. Number 16, Israel needs to know the cause and consequence of replacement foolology in Christianity and in Judaism, and how it has led to the denial of Yahweh, the denial of Dod, the Bereth Covenant, the Mikre invitations, and to the demonization of Jews. There is nothing more lethal, and it has been played out in Christianity, in Judaism, and in Islam. But replacement foolology, which is the replacement of Dod with either Simon Bar Kokhba or with this myth of Jesus Christ, the replacement of Jews with the Christians, the replacement of Yahweh's 7 Moed Mikre with the insanity of Easter and Christmas and other Christian holidays. It is reprehensible, and it buries the truth under a pile of lies. And it is the Christian foolology that was made possible because Jews didn't stand up and recognize what Dod had done. And understand that Christian Jesus is nothing but identity theft. The myth is based entirely on robbing Dod of his title Messiah, of his title Son of God, and of his work as our Savior. And so it is a devastating thing for Jews, and so they need to understand the cause and consequence of replacement foolology in both Christianity and Judaism, because it is essential they come to know that their Messiah is Dod David, that he is the Son of God, that he is their Savior. He was the Zeruah, the Passover Lamb. He is their Shepherd. He is the returning King. And it is through him that we're able to live in God's company. Number 17, Israel's strategy against Islam must be to de-weaponize and quarantine, not accommodate or moderate. You can't live with Muslims in your midst. They will kill you. They will torture you. They will mutilate you. they will do everything they can to destroy Israel and Jews. And so the only thing that can be done with this disease is to distance yourself from them. The next time that Muslims attack, they need to see the blade of a bulldozer that pushes them into Jordan and out of Israel, or into the Sinai and out of Gaza. They have to be moved out of the promised land. Cannot live with this disease and not be infected by it. And you might say that is meaner, and you know, you don't want to do that. Well, I'm sorry. The consequence of not doing that is that in the Islamic world, there's been a 99% reduction in Jews. They have perpetrated genocide against you. And Israel, there has been a quadrupling of Muslims. Like, I think it's actually tenfold. I'm sorry, but you know, that this is your reality. You either deal with it or you'll die from it. Islam is a death cult. It is a deadly disease. It is satanic. You either quarantine it, everyone in your community, and eventually kill them. Israel needs to expose and condemn the alliance between progressives and Muslims. We talked about this briefly before, before they are destroyed by it. Progressives worldwide, including in Israel, are now the most vicious foe of the Jewish people and their right to exist. Particularly in America, where you have so many progressive Democrats who vote in favor of those who would destroy their nation. Israel should make Goddamn Religion, the 5 volumes exposing and condemning Islam, Twistianity, the 4 volumes exposing and condemning Christianity, Babel, the 3 volumes that expose the books that were written in Babylon and rabbinical Judaism in the process, An Introduction to God, I Am, who You Are, Yada Yahweh, which means to know Yahweh, Observations, and especially Coming Home, which are Dode's songs to his people, calling them back home before he returns. They need to be required reading. While a remnant will be spared, its size depends upon what Jews come to know and accept. And there is no better source of information from God's people than those 35 books, all of which are free online. Number 20, Israel needs to remove the laws against speaking openly and honestly about her religious foes, and then start conducting national referendums to unite the nation to a common cause. Currently, Israel is a house divided. So if Israel wants to have a common cause in its own defense, the first thing I would encourage Israel to do is to begin holding national referendums. Talk about, do you want to draft Haredim or not? Let the people vote. Do you want to stay along the Philadelphia corridor to keep the Muslims there from rearming themselves? Is Israel united in this? Have a referendum on a constitution, on limiting the powers of the high court. Have referendums so that you communicate, write people, think it through, and then once you have decided, stop the hundreds of thousands of people protesting to bring down the government. And this is my best advice, is that you need to start acting as if you actually cared about your survival as opposed to your individual politics or your religion. And I say this because Israel is being threatened, and now as a house divided, it has no chance of surviving. So those are my thoughts on Israel. As I say, I think I've earned the right to share them. I know that there's some things that I have said here that would be shocking to many people, but that's because the world has been misled for so long. What things would you like to add to that, Kirk?
Well, just one thing that came up that the thing about the children, if you took a child away from
yes.
Islamic thing,
yes.
And I thought, well, what about if they have an Islamo and they can determine good and evil? And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, this is a rerun. Yahweh already did this with Noah. He,
yes.
he produced those very people, and he at that time could not save them. He only saved
right.
the ones that were with him with Noah's family and started all over again. So he's already set the precedent that you cannot
yep.
save these people. If you can't get them out and put them somewhere or give them land somewhere over the other continent, you can't do anything. So
let me give you two more examples. The flood
sure.
is a beautiful example where that region where were the most vicious, most religious people, the Nephilim, reigned. Yahweh just said, we need to reboot and start over because they can't deal with this. Next is when Yahweh said that the time of the peoples in Canaan was now full. Their inequity was full. There was nothing now that could be done for them, and he wanted that culture eliminated, just like you would eliminate rats with the bubonic plague in a home to keep from destroying the home. So God says, they're to the point where they have bred this into their culture, where there's nothing even I can do for them. So they need to be exterminated.
Yeah.
Now, if God's telling you to do it, you can do it. Otherwise, you don't resort to violence. That's why my proposition with Islam has always been quarantine. You know, another example is that Israel became so belligerent, embittered towards God, that in the book of Hosea, Yahweh asked Hosea to marry a temple prostitute so that he would have empathy for what God was enduring, trying to deal with his religious people. And he finally says, tell them I'm divorcing them. It's over until the very end. At the very end, I will come back to them and we will resolve this relationship. Between now and then, there's no hope for my people. I'm just going to distance myself from them. I'm going to heaven. And then he told us through the prophet Yeshaya there wasn't a single Israelite, not one, for over 2,000 years that would listen to him.
That's right. Until now.
So God also realizes that his own people can breed this kind of problem where there is nothing you can do on behalf of a child. That's why he said in the second statement that he etched in stone, that fathers condemn their children to the third and fourth generation. And that's ongoing because if one father condemns his children and his children's children and his children's children's children, the next father condemns out another generation and the next another generation. And it happened with Jews for generations all the way from the time of Dode 3,000 years ago to very recently.
You know,
so that's another example of the same thing. So it has nothing to do with race, by the way. It has nothing to do with skin color. It has all to do with culture.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the Jewish culture has been wrong about God. And God has been very clear to say that the Goyim culture has been wrong about most everything, including him. And so human culture has bred people to the point that God is now saying, if he does not return, there is no hope for humanity. There's no hope for the planet. So God is now to the point where he said, unless we bring this to a conclusion and eliminate all religious and political people, then there is no hope for life or for the planet, which is why we're here trying to encourage people to accept the covenant and become part of God's family before all of the religious and political actors are eliminated for the culture that they have conceived, such that a child born into this culture has no chance.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
So, there are more examples. I'm glad you brought that up because I gave two, but we just came up with three more.
Yeah.
And
well, you know,
we have shown that God himself views what we have said is true.
Do you remember when you did the study on the Canaanite religion and you compared it to the Roman Catholic Church? That's the biggest, it's ironic that that's the biggest religion in the world anti-Semitic to the core, and here it is identical or so close mm-hmm. to the Canaanite religion, which God has already condemned there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the, in fact, I just wrote it in Twistianity Volume 1. I went through either Volume 1 or Volume 2, but I've just brought that whole section into that to show the commonality with the Canaanite religion. And Christianity is so similar to it, from the Lord being God, Him being the Son of the Son, the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God, their festivals, their rites, their Trinity, all of it is goes right back to the Canaanites, who Yahweh said their iniquity is full. I can't. There's nothing that can be done to help them.
Wow, it still spread.
Yep, and the reality is that as bad as it is, Islam is worse.
Yeah.
Christianity is Paul did everything wrong. You know, I'm in the middle right now of rewriting Twistianity, and you just read how the stupid statements this man made, and to think that there are billions of Christians reading a book that was either written entirely by and written and inspired entirely by Paul, that he is Christianity, and and he completely irrational, constantly misquotes God, and all of his citations from the Torah to disprove the Torah completely butchers. And yet this man is believed. He's the one that came up with this replacement to the Torah by trying to annul the Torah, claiming to speak for the God he was contradicting and demeaning. It's the dumbest thing ever. And Christians will say, well, if you were to accuse Paul, then you're probably demon-possessed. No, idiot. Paul himself admitted to being demon-possessed. Read your own stupid book. Anyway, it's just amazing how, I didn't think it was possible to be as mocking of a religion as I finally became of Islam, because there is nothing even remotely credible in the Quran. And yet you read Paul's letters, and he's just a complete, deliberately dishonest dunderhead.
But you know
hard.
Be in this stuff.
Yeah, he didn't get anything right. Yeah, to be religious, you just flat out have to be stupid. And that's also true of Judaism, particularly with the Haredim, where that religion was created just a couple of hundred years ago in the Ukraine. It bears nothing to do with Yahweh. It's like spitting in Yahweh's face. So, this is the world we live in. I hope that some of what we said resonates with Israelites, and all we really want from this message is for good people, wonderful Jewish people, but Goyim as well, to listen to what God has to say, to celebrate His name and His Son, to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, to attend His Moed Mikre, to embrace Him, be part of His family, and come home. And so long as there are individuals, and there's a growing number every day, who do this, then God is pleased. And for the rest of you, you've got 9 years. You better make the most of it. Well, I thank you for listening. Thank you, Kirk, for being with us this evening. We look forward to being with you this time next week. We'll return to our review, where we've had just a wonderful experience with Yoel. We have a little more to speak of what Yoel has to offer. And then we'll return to the Mizmor of Doubt. Thank you so much for listening. May Yah bless you all. Good night.
Good night.
This summer, ditch the walk to the rideshare lot at Love Field and get picked up curbside in a luxury SUV. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. We've redefined your airport ride with professional employee drivers, a consistent fleet of SUVs, and plenty of luggage space in every Alto. Plus, every Dallas Alto has a car seat for your little adventurer, too. Take your time. Your Alto will wait as long as you need, and the first 5 minutes are on us. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit RideAlto.com/radio to learn more.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.